WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're in the midst of a conversation with Ron Cassie from Baltimore Magazine. Before we do that, I want to tell everybody about my friends at the Maryland Crab Cake Tour and the Maryland Lottery. I usually let myself play, and you know, Ron's trying to send me out to Hamden and run around with Santa Claus and doing different stuff on New Year's, but we're turning down the Crab Cake Tour for just a week. We're going to restart again as the Ravens make a playoff run. Ron Cassie's our friend and executive editor, and we often talk about cool things around Baltimore and fun ideas and his book on local cool stuff. But when we last left on the radio side, we were in the midst of an incredible story. And Ron, I want you to pick it up, just to, assuming most people are caught up on this. But we were talking about an incredible story that's in this month's magazine of a post-Freddie Gray four-time trial of apparently an innocent man who was shot by police officers here.
But in defense, Ron, as you jump into this, Marilyn Mosby would say, Nestor, you're wrong. He's not innocent. He committed this murder. So pick it. That's where Nestor is going. Pick it up there. You were talking about Mosby's passion for this case.
Yeah. So this became personal, right? Because Keith Davis Jr.'s wife, Kelly, became a really outspoken advocate in defense of her then boyfriend, for now husband. And there has been protests at city halls, at public events regarding Marilyn Mosby, at the courthouse. And the story gained a lot of traction locally, became an issue in the last state's attorney's office race, and will again. And it's getting national exposure now. You know, I know like the Innocence Project and people there have read our story. There's people in the music community who read, you know, our story this month. And it's getting, you know, more known, the case. And, you know, there was off ramps, right? I mean, when the jailhouse snitch is discredited, the state's attorney's office can say, listen, we've tried three times with this, you know, we're not going to go any further. When, you know, there's, when the last conviction is overturned, you can say, we're not going to go anymore. You know, when, you know, the first trial, 11 to 12 vote to acquit, you could give up, you could, you know, exit there at that point. There's plenty of off ramps from this, as opposed to going forward. I mean, as Kelly Davis says, and Tawanda Jones will say, another activist in the city whose brother was killed by police, they dropped all the charges against police. They didn't even go to trial with all the police officers who laid to death of Freddie Gray. And this one they keep prosecuting, and it's hard, you know, it's gotten personal. Marilyn Mosby, you know, kind of infamously gave the finger to a Keith Davis supporter.
You remember that incident, Nestor, when somebody rode by on a bike? And she was out with friends in, down in Harbor East, right? And
yeah,
it was a free Keith Davis sign, and she flipped him the bird, right?
Yeah, it got caught on video, and then she denied it, and then later admitted it.
Why is she so vested in this? Because the kid got murdered at Pimlico, and she needs to put somebody in jail?
I mean, the police do not put most people in jail for murder. So, I don't want to – you know, it's hard to speculate about somebody's motives, but what other prosecutors have said, other defense attorneys have said, is generally three times is the limit, right? That's the unspoken rule about prosecutions. If you don't have it at that point, you go to the family and say, we did the best we could. Keith Davis Jr. has been incarcerated for 6.5 years. The state's attorneys, and he's married and has four kids. They have tremendous, tremendous leverage. And he's maintained his innocence throughout. What the other district attorneys will say, other prosecutors, experts, law professors will say, once you get past three times, you've got to start looking at the motivation of the prosecutor's office and why they're doing this. You know, it begins to get personal. People get stubborn. Their heels get dug in. They see it as a loss of face. Issues like that are what you have to look at. And there are indications, you know, the other day, Marilyn Mosby posted on her Instagram, on her Twitter feed about all the haters in the city. This is after the hearing where he turned down, rejected the plea officers. It has gotten personal. I mean,
she's refused, Ron. She's refused to talk with you, right? Despite repeated requests.
Right. And I will say,
she's never been on this program. I mean,
will say that's a little bit unusual. That's not totally unusual since the case is ongoing. You know, at various times she's called Keith Davis Jr. a repeat violent offender, and he is not a repeat violent offender. And he has not been convicted. He is in jail right now without a conviction. So
I want to give you a chance, because I think Nestor will be interested, and I know our listeners will. I want to run through the main points of the murder case that the prosecution continues to make and have you respond to each one. Number one, the prosecution will say that the test fire markings from the gun that the police say they recovered near Davis matches the shell casings from Pimlico. That's number one. There are going to be four of them. Take us through one.
Well, the first thing to remember is the BPD's ballistics expert at the very first armed robbery trial testified that that gun had not been fired that day. It's actually not clear whether the gun had ever been fired. It's a collector's item, a target shooting pistol that the last known owner said he consigned to two gun shops. One, he couldn't remember which one in Glen Burnie, but one was Otto's Police Supply, so both popular among law enforcement. So that's the first problem, is that gun was not found. So at that point, if it was used in the commission of a crime 5 hours earlier, you have to believe Keith Davis Jr. took the weapon home and had all the lubricants and oils and rotting bores to clean a gun so efficiently that a police officer would, a ballistics would say it had never been fired, right?
And then to bring it back out.
Exactly, Nestor.
So that,
to bring it out the arm to point at a cab driver. That's amazing. But there's another point. That ballistics,
because he couldn't find water to throw it in or anything, right?
Right, right, right.
Right. So after you commit a crime with it, right?
Right. So that's boggles the imagination. But the other thing is generally, and I think listeners would be interested in this. Ballistics are not forensic science. They're somebody eyeballing up lines, right? They're not like what we're led to believe by watching the TV shows. Detroit Police Department had to close down their ballistics department because they had a 10% error rate. So it's not the exact science. And you can imagine, anybody who's worked in a machine shop, they're made by the markings put in this gun by the machine when the gun is created. So if you get Baltimore, they used to make the Beretta pistols, right? You can imagine the gun markings in these Beretta pistols would be very similar day after day. I mean, over time, the machine would wear down and start creating different markings on the gun, which would create different markings on the shells and the casings. But, the National Academy of Science has come out with a report warning about the way the ballistics are used. And in fact, in Maryland now, when that evidence is presented in court, it has to be presented differently than it used to. It basically says that this gun can't be ruled out.
Second,
it's not DNA like we're led to believe.
So the first point, we listen and we say, not sure about that. Second point, I'm the prosecutor, and I say to you, come on, Ron, I've got a palm print, a partial palm print that matches Keith Davis Jr.
Yeah, well, a palm print, again, is a partial palm print is not DNA. And that the palm print expert at the police department testified that she did this scan, this analysis in 6 minutes. From the time it took her 6 minutes to sign the prints out, take it back to her office, do the analysis. She never made any notes, take it back, sign it back in. Palm prints as well are not forensic science. There's somebody eyeballing up lines, and especially the partial print gets hairy. And the other thing too to keep in mind is the Baltimore police, were guilty of pressing a gun subsequently into the hand of somebody who received a settlement from the city to get a print on a gun. So the defense theory to keep in mind is that this gun was planted after the fact to cover up this wrongful shooting, and Keith Davis is unconscious, and that I guess the theory is right that it was pressed into his hand to get a partial print. And this case brings up so many beyond Keith Davis Jr. problems with the police department. The BPD palm prints off the fingerprinting office has a backload of tens of thousands of fingerprints that they don't even get to analyze and are thrown out. And the idea that this was rushed, at best seems clear.
So then you get, because Nestor has an inquiring mind, he anticipated this one.
Yeah,
they've got a.
He's
cell
making
tower.
This up, by the way. I haven't anticipated anything, but
they've got a cell tower
so,
pinging on Davis's phone in Pimlico, where the gentleman was killed.
Right. So when we have our phone and we're looking to where we go, it has our exact location, right? But to reverse that, the cell phone tower pings do not. They're just picking up that you're in a radius somewhere, right? And so there is not an exact location. And there is no dispute that Keith Davis Jr. is essentially in the area of both the armed robbery of the hack, which is was just close by Pimlico and Pimlico, because he spent the night at his girlfriend's mother's house. Keith Davis Jr. is a friend of her brother's. And there was a cookout. He spent the night there. There's text messages and phone calls all night long, all into the next morning, that he's in this neighborhood. And, you know, those radiuses and what cell phone.
Did he have any attachment to the man who was murdered?
This is a great point. There's no evidence that they ever met or knew each other whatsoever.
And you've refuted
And there's no.
So this wasn't something where he was raging all night looking to kill this guy at 5 a.m, right? No evidence at all of that.
He's on the phone and texting with his girlfriend and other people all night, all morning long. There's no evidence he knew this guy whatsoever. And to that point, again, in regards to the cell phone, the detective, Mark Vini, in the case, recovers two cell phones from Kevin Jones, the murder victim, and keeps them on his person for 11 months and never admits them into evidence as is required by the BPD guidelines.
But this is a bad... This is just sloppy,
man. Yeah. If I'm in Dirty Harry's, police ward back, and I'd say this is bad. This is going to get out in the papers. You know what I mean? This isn't good.
Yeah,
it's not a good look. The fourth point you've already refuted, which is the cell phone or the security video, which you said you've seen, and looks heavier, and regardless, you can't make out who it is. So. You've got Nestor and I interested. I'm sure our audience. Yeah. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, about the surveillance video, you know, that's accidentally introduced at the third trial. You know, and the detective, you know, he says he's seen the video and there's no exculpatory evidence. He didn't think. That's an incredible statement. I mean, you see the Kevin Jones walk by, and then you see a guy walk by seconds later pulling a mask down over his head with him. You know. And there's other, right. There's a witness to the shooting who never gets interviewed, and there's a lone eyewitness, and he describes a man very different than Keith Davis Jr. He describes somebody in his 30s or 40s, heavier built. And there's also a Pimlico security guard, new Kevin Jones, who actually gives police a plausible motive for the killing. He notes that Kevin Jones had told him that he was a drug dealer. He'd been trying to get out of the game. He had been shot once in the leg himself. He had witnessed his cousin being murdered a couple weeks before. And the podcast Undisclosed, which had done something on this case, showed that there was few associates of Kevin Jones who'd been murdered around the time. And again, Keith Davis Jr., police have not been able to show any that they even had ever met, knew each other. There's no DNA evidence. There's no motive in the case.
Ron, as we wind this down, you don't have a crystal ball. It's a fascinating story. Again, I encourage folks either go online, baltimoremagazine.net, or still pick up the December issue.
Well, we go on and on about how innocent this can happen to innocent people. And this is where you and I get scary. Sideways on death penalty and, you know, all of that, right? Like down the line of who... What does it take to put someone in jail? What does it take to keep them in jail, right? I wonder that with the ex-president every single day and Mark Meadows as well. You know, when you're talking tape, Ron, I'm thinking, is the video more or less damning than the Marjorie Taylor Greene gatewalk around the D.C. bomb thing? You know, like, because I think we can all jump to conclusions about Bigfoot and the Yeti, right, and whatever. But when you don't have evidence and you've done this four times, just as a citizen, I want murderers to go to jail and like all of that. But you know, there does come a point where this guy got shot up and they don't have anything on him. Yeah. And we're 6.5 years into this. This isn't good.
So that's where we end up, Ron. How in your crystal ball, as you follow this case, you're clearly invested in it. How does it play out? If we come back a year from now, how does this play out?
Well, the trial is scheduled for. I mean, there's a kicker too to this, by the way. We haven't mentioned. A year ago, Keith Davis Jr. was involved in a prison fight. I have also seen outside surveillance of this and was charged with attempted murder in prison. And it was, there was no weapon ever discovered. This the corrections officers witnessed the whole thing. It happened inside a tiny cell. Both men, Keith Davis Jr. and another guy, both walked away from the fight. And essentially, as part of this plea deal, the state's attorney's office has offered to drop this charge.
Ron, Nestor hit on this earlier. I know we're wrapping up, but Nestor said it feels like there's a missing, feels personal, feels like something's going on here with this case and the state's attorney's office.
Yeah, well, I mean, the charge for a prison fight in a cell that's witnessed by a corrections officer who says he never recovered a weapon or anything like that. Both men walk away. And the charge of attempted murder or something like that is again, kind of incredible. And I've seen the surveillance and seen them walking away from this fight, both men, once other corrections officers show up.
Well, I imagine if I was in jail 4 or 5 years, you know, and somebody came at me, you know what I mean? I don't belong there. The whole thing just smells. And, you know, and it takes journalism and it takes people like you to go out and write facts, the truths.
This looks like it's headed to a trial in May.
Another trial,
fifth trial for the Kevin Jones murder. The sixth trial around the same incidents, if you count the original armed robbery and firing weapon at police officers, and now a seventh thing because of this attempted murder for this prison fight. I mean, Colin Miller, professor at the University of South Carolina, who researches, you know, repeated prosecution, describes Keith Davis Jr. as the most aggressively prosecuted man in American history.
I mean, that's a pretty serious observation, Ron.
Right. And I think, you know, one thing is Marilyn Mosby will say, you know, for her, it's about justice for Kevin Jones, a Pimlico security guard. And nobody deserves to be shot 11 times, you know, like he was. But justice is justice for everybody, or it's not justice, right? There's only justice.
You got the wrong guy.
Right. There's only the truth and justice. There's not justice for one person and not the other. So it's only, right. So that's, I think, you know, a fifth trial, who knows how it will go. I mean, if you keep trying somebody over and over again, you have to believe, just like if you're shooting a basketball or hitting a baseball, eventually you're going to, you know, sink the shot,
yeah,
right?
I mean, sounds like you're saying, yeah, you're eventually going to wear them down. Well, Ron, I told Nestor this was going to be a fascinating segment. We obviously will have you back on for updates as we go forward. I know you're not going to let it go. What are you working on next before we let you get out of here?
We have a great cover story, more fun, a literary Baltimore cover story for January called The City That Writes.
And we pulled
together the 13 current literary stars from Baltimore, Laura Lippman and Dee Watkins, and to write about 13 past Baltimore writers, the H.L. Mencken. So Laura Lippman writes about Edgar Allan Poe. And
my guess is Nestor will have you back on to talk about that.
Yeah, what month is that? Is that January?
That's our January issue. So that'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, a real celebration of Baltimore, right?
Always good to catch up with you, dude, man. Appreciate it, and appreciate the journalism. And at some point, we'll get together, rub elbows, and have some Royal Farms coffee or a pizza at Pizza John's or something delicious, all right?
A vegan crab cake at Land of Kush.
A vegan crab cake.
We're bringing Jamie Raskin for that one. We're going to bring Jamie Raskin.
A vegan crab cake, which is unbelievable, trust me, at Land of Kush in West Baltimore, Black-owned. Restaurant.
Jamie Raskin,
love it.
I'm in.
Calvin Ball. We got a whole bunch of folks that want the vegan crab cake. Ron, happy holidays. Always great to catch up. Good luck at Baltimore Magazine.
Thanks, guys.
Ron Cassie, you're talking Kush and talking January edition of Baltimore Magazine. All of it brought to you by our friends at Cole Roofing. We're going into 2022 with style. We got a lot of new things going on. We got some new sponsors coming on. The Crab Cake Tour is moving out. And about all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. And Don Moeller hanging around and reconning. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore positive.